Welcome to the ANews Podcast. This is episode 122. This podcast covers anarchist activity, ideas, and conversations from the previous week on anarchist news. It's designed to be useful to anarchists and the anarcho-curious. Give us feedback and constructive criticism by email at podcast@anarchistnews.org. For more information and usually some good commentary, go to the nonsectarian anarchistnews.org. Editorial. Our heads are round so our thoughts can change direction. At a recent gathering, a friend brought up an interesting quote. Paraphrasing, they said something to the effect of, "Culture can't cause a rupture with society." Just to make a quick clarification, I'm going to define culture in this sense as anarchist cultural productions, i.e. podcasts, music, publications, and other things that we generally make. I would have to say that I generally agree with that statement, but likely don't share the mindset which views this truly as a failure. In terms of pretty much everything I can think of, but particularly culture and media, recuperation seems to stand as the beginning, middle, and/or endpoint of producing anything, whether it be a podcast, a set of ideas, or a tactic. Even something like the indiscriminate attack of ITS seems pretty vulnerable to this, and really, it seems that armies and assholes have been using that strategy for more authoritarian ends for quite a long time. All this is to say that I don't come at something like this podcast or any project with the idea that it is truly a break from the dominant order. Not only because at some point I rely on non-anarchist infrastructure to produce and to live, but also because I don't see any of my actions leading to a more anarchistic world. I'm about to get into some territory that I feel has been, unfortunately, monopolized by egoist writings recently and the weirdly stilted language that seems to imply. But I've never read Stirner and have no faith in the individual, so I guess take from this what you will. As I've become involved in this podcast over the past year plus, I've come to see it, and many other projects, as similar to how I've heard punk described. Namely, a group of people creating beautiful things for each other and each other alone. I'm guessing the link between these would probably be something called subculture, and not the pragmatic quest for an ultimate rupture from the existent, but that is something I am completely okay with. Even if I was interested in changing the world, I don't believe I'm capable of doing so. Even if anarchists were capable of truly turning society towards anarchist ends, I don't really trust enough people to see that as being positive for me. But what I do see are the changes that involving myself slash allowing myself to be involved with projects like this podcast have occurred in my life. It's allowed me to think and act differently on a scale that's maybe as big as myself and a couple other people. I've had the chance to push myself to change from where I was at the beginning of my anarchism, and I've been able to do it with people who seem to have chosen living with the beautiful idea at a human scale. Though maybe I'm projecting on that last point. I am for sure a broken person, a person with a weak personality and an even weaker will. I'm working on it, but that is beside the point. I like to think that this has given me a form of humility that sometimes works to my advantage, but likely I'm just rationalizing my own faults. That said, I do want to recognize that humans, not even to mention anarchists, are just a grain of sand in the desert of existence, and if I'm going to do anything, it is with the understanding that it will be at the scale of sand. I'm going to be batted around by the winds, which are beyond my control, but if I can at least share something beautiful with the shiniest grains, that's something. Erg. Metaphors.
The age of the chains of desert, you're a well of dense fluids. From the passing of time, you are derived from the late you've left behind.
What's new this week? This Week in History, 1978. Punk rockers and anarchists stage an anti-Canada Day concert in Stanley Park. From the Vancouver Sun, mainstream media story about how the anarchists and the punks were cool, rebellious, and required assistance from Christian strangers, so fairly standard mainstream media treatment. Quote, there had been punk gigs before this, but the Anti-Canada Day show was sort of the big bang of Vancouver's musical underground, sparking a magic period when Vancouver became one of the creative hotbeds of the punk slash new wave scene. The fact that in some ways the gig was a disaster, and there were only about 100 people there, only added to its legend. In between songs, some anarchists got on stage and railed against the state and borders. At one point, someone urged the audience to burn money and lit some on fire. Me and Randy tried to grab the bill because we were so broke. He was burning like a 20, laughs Keith Lee. We were going, you're insane, and tried to wrestle the bill out of his hands before it burned up. Unquote. These stories are irritating because of nostalgia and the inevitable undercurrent of You can't fight City Hall. Grrr.
I am a left-wing anarchist. Guns aren't just for right-wingers. From Vox by Kim Kelly. Subtitled The Long Forgotten Story of Pro-Gun Left-Wing Groups. Perhaps the story is mostly that the left wing can include guns headline still seems counterintuitive enough to be an article in Vox. Quote, I'm of the firm opinion that it's time to not only arm the left, but challenge the narrative that all leftists are anti-gun. Many are, and that's a position I can understand and respect. But there is also a long history of armed community self-defense among the radical left that is often glossed over or forgotten entirely in favor of the Fox News-friendly narrative that all liberals hate guns. That's simply not the case. Though, as history has proven, the only thing that scares the reactionary right more than the idea of losing their guns is the thought of us having them, unquote. A pro-gun leftist argues their case, which makes as much sense as anything. By which I mean, having a gun will protect you in some situations and fuck you up in others. No one but you can determine which type of situation you're most likely to get into. Nothing wrong with having options and making informed decisions, right?
Announcing the second annual Halifax Anarchist Book Fair, September 7th, 2019. Quote, in the spirit of rebellion, we invite you to come to the second annual Halifax Anarchist Book Fair. Come out whether you're a seasoned anarchist, excited to learn about anarchism, a curious skeptic, a lover of books, or if you're simply becoming disillusioned with capitalism and the government. Featuring publishers and book distributors, vendors, artists, and facilitators from all over North America / Turtle Island, the day will be filled with presentations, workshops, films, discussions, kids' activities, art exhibits, parties, and more. Let's connect our struggles, build our capacities, and support anti-authoritarian revolutionary culture and community. Please get in touch with your workshop proposals, table request inquiries, accessibility needs, collaboration ideas, and wildest dreams at Halifax Anarchist Book Fair at riseup.net, unquote.
Trump is not the main problem, from Anarchismo by Wayne Price. While I would not say that there is much that is anarchist about this piece, I will say that it is an example of a thoughtful person taking the current political situation seriously and thinking through some aspects of it. Quote, liberals often complain about how wishy-washy and spineless the Democrats are in the face of right-wing attacks. This is in contrast to the Republicans, who are principled and even fanatical about their goals. There is a reason for this difference. If the Republicans stir up their white, relatively privileged, racist, middle-class base into hysterical frenzies, this might result in the nomination of a Trump, or at worst, an attack on bourgeois democracy, but not on capitalism. But if the Democrats were to rile up their base to excite the African-American community and blue-collar workers to mobilize unions and to organize mass action by youth, this could threaten capitalism. Unlimited demands by workers, people of color, people threatened by climate change, etc., would go past the limits of the capitalist economy. This the Democrats cannot allow and will not permit, unquote. I'm not saying that Wayne is right or that I agree with him, but I absolutely think it's worth reading people we disagree with when they flesh out their ideas, which I think he does here better than usual. I suggest avoiding the thread for this as it involves far too much Sir Einziga at his repetitive best.
Next, from M. Shimshon, a first-person account of how shit's fucked up in Greece, about how the flush of revolutionary activity fades, about what it means to be nihilist in the streets. The writing is unpolished, but there's something solid there. Quote, hey, you know that guy you vaguely knew at the beginning of last summer? He's trying to kill you now. Migrants, anarchists, tourists, police, mafias, beefs, boredom, business. What the fuck happened to this place? No question mark. As I arrived again this summer in what had already become a romanticized haven, I discovered nothing was happening. That's okay, it's the end of the summer, I've been told. I go to the plataea and notice a distinctive lack of any women, or even hippies for that matter. All I hear is, Mavro, Mavro, Thelis Mavro. Black, black, you want black. Black means weed, because darkness represents everything underground, not let into the market or proper channels, even in Greece. The plataea used to be the place of joyous friction, where everyone would gather, drink, share their stories, escape from riots, etc. Now it is a marketplace and nothing else. I left feeling nauseous and nervous. Unquote.
The saga continues. Updates on queer resistance and repression in Hamilton. From North Shore Counter Info by Anonymous. A long update on the day of actions, continuing police harassment, the mayor flipping his shit, and Cedar's situation. Quote, Our day of action on Friday far exceeded everyone's expectations. Close to 50 solidarity actions took place across several continents, and in Hamilton, our night demo was a wild success. Somewhere between 150 to 200 queers and supporters took the street for a night march that was explicitly anti-cop and anti-state. Folks screamed incendiary chants against the cops, the mayor, and celebrated trans, queer, and non-binary existence as necessarily political and irrecuperable. After snaking downtown, the demo concluded with a dance party and fireworks show that overtook and shut down one of the city's busiest intersections. Against this backdrop, repression has unfortunately continued to intensify and expand outwards to focus on more people and criminalize additional activities. As part of this trend, organizing in the city has been met with a growing police presence. The numbers of police officers present at rallies and other events has far exceeded what is usual for Hamilton. This statement is intended to provide an overview of the most recent developments and give some brief updates on where folks are at. Unquote. Cedar is no longer on hunger strike, but apparently is still in isolation, a not uncommon but terrible tactic for prisons to manage trans folks. It turns out that the actual reason for Cedar's arrest is not their alleged parole-breaking participation in Pride, which they demonstrably did not do, but a speech they made at a city-sponsored event in which they promoted community defense for queers rather than police presence.
The Counter Revolution of 1776, the Genocide of 1779, and the Village Destroyer, Washington. From Black Rose Federation by Brendan Maslauskas Dunn. A Black Rose member reflects on overcoming youthful patriotism with the help of alternative historians. Quote, historian Gerald Horn is right. He took Zinn's argument even further and said that the American Revolution was a counter-revolution, that the War of Independence in large part was launched as a response to growing slave rebellions in the southern colonies and the Caribbean, but also to the early signs of a gradual transition to abolition in England and beyond. The writing was on the wall, and something had to be done to secure slavery as an institution. It's no surprise that tens of thousands of slaves fled to and took up arms on the side of the British during the war. To them, that army, with all its contradictions, was one of revolutionary liberation, not Washington's Continental Army. The ideas of despotism, violence, oppression, slavery, and genocide were woven into the very fabric of the foundation of this nation in 1776. Unquote. This is awkwardly written, and there's nothing specifically anarchist about it, but it is sweet in places.
Audio and video. Final Straw Radio, Hamilton Pride Defenders plus The Specter and the Sovereign. An hour. Sean Swain is back after a few weeks of silence and is absolutely hilarious. After a disclaimer stating that Noam Chomsky is still a douchebag, Sean launches into his failed efforts to produce his own, quote, Swainiacs, unquote, with the help of a ziplock of his reproductive material, a turkey baster, and a willing participant. You should definitely listen to this. Sean is hilarious, and writing an anarchist humor column for prison is insane. A disclaimer of our own, however, please do not listen to Sean Swain for gynecological advice. The rest of the episode is mostly a conversation between Burse and an anarchist from Hamilton, Ontario, recapping the Lock Street Affair, a recent confrontation with right-wingers at Hamilton Pride, and the repression-slash-general fuckery of the police aimed at anarchists and queer folks. The episode ends with a bit of a non sequitur, Timothy Grieve Carlson, who appears to be a PhD student, reading their paper on biopower and the paranormal at the 2019 North American Anarchist Studies Network conference. So basically a dude reads an almost interesting but mostly boring paper. Listen to Sean Swain.
Woohoo! Anarchy Radio, an hour. Jay-Z has some very harsh words for the collective, tearful sob, and states that we, quote, don't believe in ethics or values, sob. The rest of the episode lists the bad news of the week, and John reads his piece titled Experience, which seems to be an exercise in how many quotes you can jam into a quote-unquote original piece of writing. One call from someone promoting a Facebook page fighting for, quote, migrant and refugee rights, unquote.
Anna, the woman who went to fight ISIS. From the BBC, a documentary about a British woman who goes to fight in Rojava and dies. The documentary is only available in the UK after you pay for a TV license. So we will have to wait for a report from someone who fulfills those requirements or is a better hacker than I. Given those limitations, this extended thread is most interesting for an impassioned denouncement of the Rojava fighting forces by an Anon. And of course, Anons know everything, know nothing, know something, and always slash never slash sometimes tell the truth. Here we quote one of them. Quote, The question is more, how an army leaded by authoritarian Marxist-Leninists, whose supreme leader is a man with a very big mustache, who wrote a so-called feminist theory, because Ocalan is God, right? He can decide what is good for women. Our people are aware that it's strictly forbidden for YPJ members to have intimate relationships? Yeah, right. A feminist revolution where sex is forbidden. To quote our dear Emma Goldman, and change a bit the sense, if I can't fuck and love, it's not my revolution, unquote.
Anarchy Bang, episode Anarchist Posse Projects, 2 hours. Quote, what exactly is it that we do want in terms of anarchism and or anarchy? In other words, let's say that all the big bad things are made to go away through some means or another, then what exactly would our brave new anarchist world look like? What specifically would the people in an anarchist society or community or whatever be doing? What is our big end goal? What's the beautiful dream? Back in the day, various books were written about this topic, both nonfiction such as Fields, Factories, and Workshops by Kropotkin, and Bolo Bolo, and fiction such as The Dispossessed and The Fifth Sacred Thing. And of course, there's the whole solar punk phenomena that is floating around the interwebs these days. We can talk about these writings if they describe the kind of anarchist world that you would like to live in, and if not, then fuck it. What's important is your anarchist dream, your ideal world, and what it would look like. Let's go into it. Join in the conversation. Unquote. Props to taking on this issue when it will be so easy for the cynics to weigh in with their posse equals bad simplicity. Also, side note, who on earth would say that Bolo Bolo isn't fiction?
Topic of the week, fitness. Now that summer is here and things are starting to heat up, what do you do to stay active? What does your anarchist fitness and exercise program look like? Is it motivated by revolutionary goals and a defense mentality or something else? Over the past few years, some gyms, like the Haymaker Gym in Chicago, have opened up to an attempt to create a radical culture of fitness and self-defense. For them, the body is the most intimate of material forces, and as a tool for revolution and strength, as a means by which to change the world. What is your gym? They also reference Maximum Potential by Max Rez. So, fitness. Ariel.
What is your gym? I want the answer to be the world is my gym, but that's really just not true. This is interesting because we don't ever talk about stuff like this.
It's true.
I am not in a heavy fitness place in my life. I have some old injuries that I'm physical therapying my way through, but I like yoga and I try to do that once a week. It's stretchy. I was many, many, many years ago, more years than I'd like to admit, was involved in a collective that teaches self-defense here in the Bay called Girl Army, who are still around, hallelujah, and absolutely amazing. And we're really lucky because here in the Bay, we have a place called Swigetsukan, which is a primarily Danzan Ryu-Jitsu dojo. And I don't even know if primarily is the right word originally, but it has branched out and it also teaches sword, but I'm not sure what to call it. And it also teaches stick, but I also don't remember what that's called. And it's run by collective and mostly anarchists, and it's sliding scale, pay what you can. And it's just this amazing, utterly consistent resource that's been around for, well, absolutely decades.
Over 25 years, I
yeah,
think.
Yeah. So it's fantastic. And it's almost like only in the Bay or something. I don't know. It just feels like a magical thing that I've never heard of anywhere else. I know that there are a couple things that are somewhat similar to it in Seattle, but I don't know the specifics of those. I would be leery of a pre-existing gym, a for-profit institution that's attempting to appeal to my politics or aesthetic. 'Cause Yeah, then you're just a target market, and that's pretty gross. I, you know, in my heart of hearts, anarchists were all badasses and fighters. And yeah, I'd like that to be the world that I live in. I'd like that to be the person that I am. But alas, what about you?
I also have a background in both self-defense and in long-distance running. I would say that sort of the most anarchist fitness I've ever done has been to run cross-country, because running cross-country is, cross-country is over, it's over terrain. Mm-hmm. It's like running in the world.
Mm-hmm. And it's distance, so there's a minimum amount of...
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so it's generally really nothing shorter than 5K?
No, it's 5K.
Okay, yeah, that's, yeah.
Yeah.
So, I could not run 5K.
Yeah, I still remember, you know, with a lot of fondness, 5K distances and just everything about it, really loving it. But this was when I was very young at this point. You know, nowadays when I think about this topic, I think about all of the macho kids that behave petulantly around this topic, pretending like there's somehow some degree of toughness or superhero-ness that one can reach to actually be relevant as an effective fighting force. So, you know, so mostly I lean on that. I mean, today for fitness, I merely swim. And swimming, as wonderful as it is and as non-impact and all the rest, is something that you do to sort of maintain your body as a machine, especially when you live a sedentary life like I and most other people do. I like swimming, but I don't love it like I did cross country. And I also, you know, while I sort of miss martial arts on the level of like, I like getting hit in the head. I feel like that part of my life is more or less over, you know, like as you age, there's this question as to how much do you want to live with injury? And, you know, we all basically by the time you reach my age, you have injuries. And you want to be really conscious of them. My injury is I have a blown out knee, and and you know it makes me nervous when I pop it out when it pops.
For sure, yeah,
yeah. So this is an interesting topic because it's sort of that question about like, does anarchism seep into all aspects of your life, or do you divide your life up into things that may or may not be anarchist and things that are? And I kind of feel like fitness is something that I have never really considered to be part of a full anarchist life. And that sort of speaks to the fact that while I have integrated anarchism into my life as much as possible, this has felt like it's a little too far.
Mm-hmm.
We used to have like a Sunday Muay Thai group, and obviously I've participated in Sketsgon at different times of my life. But I don't feel it anymore. I don't feel like whether or not I'm capable of street fighting is necessarily going to matter in any mm-hmm. aspect of my life.
Mm-hmm.
And most of the ways in which I believe street fighting actually happens isn't actually martial training. It's more like situational training.
Sure.
Which moves it into a different space than one around fitness.
Yeah.
I wish I could run like I used to. Both my feet and my knee prevent that. But man... I love running.
Which could be why your fitness and your anarchy, there isn't a cross there, because your anarchy involves so many other people and running as a solitary activity.
Yeah,
that's fair. Where you started.
Yeah, that's fair.
I like this idea of a group of me and my anarchist friends engaging in a fitness activity together. And I do have friends that I go on hikes with. Mostly my schedule just isn't consistent enough and doesn't allow enough. I like that there are people who think that, you know, my own level of physical preparedness is going to matter in the conflict, because I feel like there's a history, there's a time when actually it did.
Sure.
You know, you might be able to run away faster or survive the beating a little better, or I think it matters less now that going up against the cops is basically going up against a small military force, and they'll just shoot you.
Yeah.
And that was less true, you know, X number of decades
ago. Well, I
ago.
Will say that, you know, when I spent a chunk of time in Greece, it was striking the fact that every group house in Greece had sticks and helmets essentially in the foyer.
Yeah.
And that's something that sort of doesn't make sense in the U.S. context.
No.
Unless we actually were having, like, ongoing street fights with fascists as a hypothetical.
Sure.
But I haven't actually heard of us escalating things to that level. Plus, of course, firearms are a lot more common in the U.S.
Sure.
And, you know, frankly, I think that we'd do better to have funny noses and eyeglasses at our doors than to have sticks and helmets.
Yeah. Escalation is tricky and scary here.
Yeah.
I can't remember what I was going to say. I am pro firearms. I've taught firearms classes in my life. I was raised on a farm. I was taught how to shoot at a very early age. But I spend time in Arizona, and owning a firearm in Arizona is very, very easy compared to California. Yeah. And people in Arizona have a very different relationship to their guns than I do.
Yeah, given that we live in a city and that city is named Berkeley, the idea of using a firearm to solve a problem seems laughable.
There would be lots of consequences that would go with it that would be a problem. And also, if you fire a gun in Berkeley, you've committed a crime, period. Regardless of what happens after that, you have to start with that. Yeah. And that changes the landscape a lot.
I mean, it's interesting when a topic like this does come up in E! News to go through the thread. The image that was chosen for this is really funny. It's a picture of Rocky jogging with the kids. It's hard to imagine, you know, again, like, well, obviously people have a variety of reasons where they choose fitness or choose a fitness sort of lifestyle. And some of those reasons were very popular in the Bay Area anarchist scene.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there is sort of like a pretty big difference between fitness and what we would call self-defense and what we would call, just all of it. I'm not sure.
that kind of just got away from you there.
I don't want to sort of like have a conversation that sort of says don't do fitness. I absolutely think that you need to do fitness for personal health and, sure, you know, for a variety of other reasons. I don't want to land on the fact that it was another A News comment threads where a bunch of people sounded ridiculous in terms of like as if they are training for something that probably will not happen, will probably not happen to them individually. Sure. And also then to turn this into a conversation about individuation rather than what does it mean to be part of something where training means something different. And, I am very thankful for the years I spent at Sagetsukan, i.e. a dojo where there are a lot of more or less like-minded people with me there together. And that is an opportunity that most people are never going to get.
Right. No, that's
true. Or what they're going to get out of it isn't something anarchist. It's going to be something about group identity.
Oh, yeah, sure. I like the idea of a future where there are less demands on my life and time, and I have, you know, we all kind of live roughly in the same area, the same piece of property, and we meet every morning for X, I don't know, yoga, stretching, calisthenics.
Sure.
Something, and then maybe, you know, from that some people go off and run. I was a dancer, I was not a runner. You're not really supposed to do both. Or, you know, whatever, hiking or and there being I like the idea of that being a regular group part of my daily life, which for me is, you know, this is my anarchist life, I guess.
Like a lot of other things, it's very hard to imagine this happening in the city, given how expensive the city is now.
Yeah, that's true.
To being able to carve out, you know, 2 to 3 hours a day
mm-hmm.
to sort of do a group activity like that seems out of reach.
Yeah, the economics for it. Just don't work, definitely.
And, you know, of course, this then brings another topic about sort of like the age of someone that participates in something like exercise together. Like, it's something that you do in your 20s and 30s.
Oh, with other people? That's probably true. Maybe if it becomes more of your identity and the thing that you do. Yeah.
Maybe we, as we move out of the city, we go to Tai Chi and Qigong.
Tai Chi. That was actually the thing that I was thinking of. What can I still make my body do when I'm 55?
Yeah, that's true.
Probably Tai Chi. Hopefully I can still punch things and, you know, maybe.
My hope also.
Maybe there's.
Tai Chi with punching.
Tai Chi with punching. There we go. Yeah, it's actually the sad thing about the dojo and the kind of jujitsu that they do. Like, it is a lot of falling and a lot of throwing your body and a lot of throwing other people's bodies. And, I don't think I could do that now.
Yeah.
Maybe I'll be at a point where I could. But so I would definitely have to look at, you know, if I were going to get back into martial arts or self-defense, something much more low impact.
Thank you for this conversation.
Thanks.
This podcast is the effort of many people. This week, the podcast was sound edited by Lynn O'Mabel. What's New was written by Jackie and Dim and read by Chisel and Dim. The editorial was written by Dim. We thank Aragorn and a friend for their help with the topic of the week, fitness. Contact us at podcast@anarchistnews.org. To learn more, anarchist and anti-political books, pamphlets, and other material are available at littleblackcart.com. For news by and or about anarchists and up-to-the-minute commentary, see you at anarchistnews.org and or the Anarchist News IRC chat room linked on ANews and or anarchy101.org.